We're going to hear House Bill 2022 in a few minutes, but right now we're going to open the public hearing and I do that first and then work session later. Right? Public hearing on 2312 and 2313. And if you would give us a little information about those two bills.
Thank you, Chair. House, for the record, House Bill 2312 would amend a set of rights for persons committed by the Department of Human Services. It would create a right for individuals to be given daily access to fresh air in the outdoors. Very similar measure, but I believe it governs other statutory provisions. Would also afford committed individuals the right to daily access to fresh air and outdoors, but it would also require that DHS would post the name, address, and telephone number of the Oregon Advocacy Center prominently at their treatment facilities.
All right, thank you. And do we have people testifying on this? And Bob, we're going to ask you this mic we're having a little bit. Why don't you sit by the other one? That would be great. And Bob Nickel, why don't you come on up? And I know you're wanting to speak too. Just want to encourage both of you not to speak in too closely to the microphones. Apparently, they're causing the people who are doing the tapes, it's causing them some problems. So don't speak in too closely. And if anybody has cell phones or Blackberries, if you would turn them off, not just turn them on so that there's no ring. They've got to turn them completely off, or else that affects the recording system. Okay, we'll take this Bob first.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bob Jundeff. I'm the director of the Oregon Advocacy Center. And I've handed out to you a little document entitled Introduction to the Oregon Advocacy Center, because I know that some of you may not be familiar with our organization. And in a sense, sort of knowing who we are might explain a little bit as to why we're here today. Oregon Advocacy Center is what's called a protection and advocacy organization, and it's funded by the federal government. And in order to have the status that we do to receive those funds, we must be designated by the governor to provide protection and advocacy services to people with disabilities across the state of Oregon. One of our tasks is to respond to complaints of abuse or neglect of people with disabilities, including people with mental illness, and to advocate for individuals who have complaints about services or, in more relevant to what we're talking about today, institutional conditions. And that brings us to House Bill 2312. House Bill 2312 is very simple in that it just adds one new feature to a Bill of Rights that exists for people who are committed under our mental health commitment laws to the state hospital or some other facility. That's a Bill of Rights that's been with us since 1967, and it creates a minimum expectation of what people who are in those environments might expect. In this case, it would add to that Bill of Rights the right of an individual in the institution to have access to fresh air in the outdoors. In most of our facilities, there are fenced-in areas or areas outside that people who are receiving treatment can go to in order to go outside, because naturally it's understood that for a person who may be confined for a short period of time, but in many cases very long periods of time, years, even as long as an entire lifetime, that getting outside on a regular basis is a good thing for them. Due to the fact that we have not been able to fund some of our facilities to the degree that we want, and sometimes because inadequate services or neglect in certain instances, people don't get outside. And frankly, from our perspective, we view this as almost the canary in the birdcage for a facility. If it can't do the little things of allowing a person to have fresh air on a regular basis, it diminishes their quality of life, and it is an indication that the facility is incapable of providing for a general quality of life and care that the person needs. So this bill is very simple. It would just add that as a right to the Bill of Rights for people and institutions. Now, I have to say that is my expectation that the rights that are provided in the Bill of Rights are not absolute, and that they have to take into account other factors. So, for example, at least in my view, safety is always paramount in an institution or in a care setting, and so if there was a risk of safety, that would have to play off against an individual's right to in any given instance. However, I think it's very important to keep this very minimal requirement as a bellwether to test the quality of our institutions. The last thing I would say is that in recent years, particularly at the state hospital, with the problems with staffing and the overpopulation, that probably the most consistent complaint to our office about conditions in the hospital had to do with people complaining about not being able to get outside. We conduct a yearly meeting at the state hospital in which patients can tell us how they're feeling about living there. And every year, this is a consistent complaint about their life in that institution. So for those reasons, I would urge you to pass this legislation. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Doonbeff. Any questions of Mr. Doonbeff? Thank you very much. Mr. Nickel.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bob Nickel, and I'm the Assistant Director to the Department of Human Services, and I'm in charge of the Addictions and Mental Health Division. As I walked over here breathing fresh air, I thought, how do I stand before a committee and in good conscience say I have to oppose the bill? But we do, reluctantly and only because of cost, obviously. Staff at the state hospital looked at what it would take to do what this bill requires and added up the number of staff that it would take to still assure safety and accommodate the requirements of this bill. And the total came to, I think, $4.4 million, which is almost entirely, if not exclusively, staffing costs. Doesn't deal with any of the architectural or design costs. This bill seems to me may also apply to our acute psychiatric inpatient units, as well as some of the locked secure facilities around the state. We have about 13 or 14 of those out in the community now. Those are the locked secure facilities, plus about 15 acute care units in general psychiatric hospitals. Some of these would probably have no problem complying with this bill, but others I believe would. And we didn't include any of the costs of redesigning and additional staffing for those programs. So I think what this bill really is a comment on what happens when a state doesn't build a new state hospital building in over 50 years, and when the state still uses a building that was designed and started construction in 1883. So I think rather than walk through in any more detail the testimony that I've provided in writing, I would just say that we would love to comply with this bill. I think the real solution is the building of a new state hospital and the community services designed appropriately. Be happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Mr. Nickel. Any questions of Mr. Nickel? Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning.
Okay.
Mr. Nickel, it's good to see you. Could you give me a little bit more information about the fiscal that you developed on this?
Madam Chair, Representative Kotek, the fiscal was based on, and I would have to look at the numbers. Originally, staff came in with, I think, 70 additional staff.
70?
At the state hospital alone. And so when you add that all up over a biennium, that comes to a pretty significant chunk of funding. That would be all state general fund. And as I said, I think it's unfortunately an underestimate, because I think we have to see how this would apply to all of the other facilities out there. So I think this is really, frankly, a bit of a shot in the dark at this point to try to really quantify how much this bill would cost. We can go back and take a more precise look, and I can give you more detail. But, you know, whether it's $2 million or $8 million, it's not in the governor's recommended budget at this point. And I can't find a way to pay for this out of the existing budget that we've got.
Follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I appreciate that there's a lot of unknowns here, and this isn't Ways and Means, but I'm wondering if Mr. Jundeff would like to, do you have any thoughts on the fiscal from hearing what you've heard? I mean, I think the issue around what you had said earlier, you know, this would be contingent upon safety of the patient, things like that. Any comments to what is the potential fiscal on this?
Madam Chair, Representative Kotek, I guess my comment is that I don't know exactly how much it would cost. I do think that I think if there we had a guarantee that under any circumstances people would need to be outside, regardless of countervailing situations, then clearly it would require more staff in the hospital. It will come as no surprise to you that I believe that the hospital is woefully understaffed. Our organization brought a lawsuit to that effect last year. The staff-to-patient ratio that we bargained for in the resolution of that case still hasn't been met, and much to our distress and the distress of the people in the institution. But again, as I stated earlier, I think that a right of this sort does have to balance off against safety features. I think what it does do would do if it was in the Bill of Rights, it would set a benchmark that everyone would understand should be met as soon as possible within this institution and in the creation of a new one.
Thank you. Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Nickel, what would you believe that the current experience of a person living in the state hospital is in terms of having access to fresh air? How often are people having the opportunity to be outdoors or to breathe fresh air?
Madam Chair, Representative Gelser, I would have to go back and to get a really quantitative answer for you. I don't disagree with what Mr. Jundeff has testified, that it has to be one of the major complaints that people have about the current facility. And if you've been there, particularly if you go into the maximum security units, they are in that old, what we call the J building that was initially constructed in 1883. And architecturally, that place doesn't make any sense for these kind of considerations. But if you would like, I can go back and try to get a more quantitative answer to that. But I think people on the discharge units, people who are getting passes, people have grounds privileges, obviously get much more adequate access to fresh air. But I think it's on the high security units and in the really outdated architecturally designed buildings that there is the greatest problem. The Portland campus has a small outdoor space. My assumption is that access there is much better, but it's not like there are grounds that are nicely enclosed where people can go for walks. I think that's a thing of the distant past when we served people who didn't represent the security risks that we have now. I mean, two-thirds of our patients are under the jurisdiction of the Psychiatric Security Review Board, and virtually all of the other patients are civilly committed, so they're all there on a court commitment, believed to be dangerous to themselves, others are unable to care, or they've committed a crime. So I think part of the issue here is that the design of the buildings took place during a time when we had, you know, when we got up to the point where we had 5,000 patients, many of whom probably didn't need to be there at all, but there was no source of support for them in the community.
Thank you.
Representative Cohen.
Morning. I guess just if you would, Mr. Nichol, help me paint me a picture of the sort of staffing that would be required to take folks in the higher security unit out. I mean, does that require one staff person with an individual? I'm just trying to get my arms around a picture of this.
Madam Chair, Representative Cowan. I know that recently we had a patient that was requiring 9 staff just to be around her in order not to seclude and restrain her all of the time. And so to take a patient like that could take as many as 8 or 9, and that's an outlier, I will grant you that. But for a patient who has, say, committed murder or rape and is in the hospital because they're guilty except for insanity, I don't think the hospital or the community would feel safe with less than 3 or 4 or 5 people accompanying them in some situations outdoors, particularly to do anything like a walk on the grounds. So I think many of the patients could get by with 1 or 2 additional staff, but people are on those high security units for a very clear reason of threat to the public, and so I would not want to skimp on that staffing.
Follow up, Representative Kahn.
I guess I would like then to address to both of you. Sometimes we get very simple language, and then we don't take into consideration all the ramifications of that. And because I heard that folks are accepting of some limitations in this obligation if there are safety concerns, is there some kind of additional language that we could put into this bill that would make exceptions for very high security or exceptional safety considerations, I guess?
Madam Chair, Representative Cowan, I believe that that could be done, and let me address a couple of things to give maybe examples. One is that at least at the state hospital, the state hospital buildings have fenced in areas around the buildings so that there are secure areas for people to go outside. And so there is a distinction between walking the grounds of the hospital and just getting outside in a secure area. If you go over there, you'll see it's very high cyclone fence with concertina, whatever it's called, wire around the top. I think that there's two situations. There's a couple of situations in which you would want to balance this right, and one, of course, is safety as a general matter, because you wouldn't want to leave a ward understaffed because you have to have staff go out to supervise. And another has to do with the treatment issue. So if for some reason, for example, the instance that Mr. Nichol cited, that particular patient, I think there would be some treatment problems in terms of...
Excuse me. I asked you to turn them completely off, not just on silence. Please turn off all of your equipment completely. Sorry to interrupt you, Robert.
Well, that was good that you did, Madam Chair, so I can comply. There are actually a couple of the rights that are in that Bill of Rights right now have qualifications written along with them, to be very specific, that they are qualified in particular ways, and we could add that if the committee would feel more comfortable with that qualification being included, to take into account safety and perhaps treatment issues.
Madam Chair, Representative Cowan, I would be happy to sit down and have that discussion. But the concern, I would just be upfront about it, I think we're already taking those kind of things into consideration, and I'm concerned that taking any staff off already understaffed wards more than we're doing could be a problem. But I'm very willing to have the discussion. Appreciate Mr. Junior's willingness to think in that direction a little bit.
Thank you.
Representative Gelser, did you have a question?
I represent counties.
Okay. Anyone else? I have some concerns following along those same lines. Since there is an area that does have the wire around it where people can't get out, it's hard for me to understand why a patient living in the hospital couldn't go out for 5 minutes accompanied by one or two people who work their staff, it's just hard for me to visualize that we're talking about 70 new staff. And what did you say? How many millions of dollars? 4.4 million?
That's correct, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, it's a situation where the bill, as the language reads, says every patient has a right to this. And that's the piece that really creates the staffing problems. There are patients, and we'd be happy to take any of you who have been up there, particularly to see the high security units and see for yourself the kind of danger that some of the people represent at certain times, and to guarantee that every patient, every time they want to or they need to go out, have a chance to do that is a severe drain on staffing, and we simply do not have the staffing to do that. If we did, I can assure you we would be taking every patient out.
Sure.
Yes, Representative.
Just a comment on this. I clearly understand where Mr. Nichols is wanting to go with this. I also understand, too, what Mr. Jundeff is thinking, too, along this line. And I do appreciate what Representative Cowan had mentioned to try to find some common ground there. From my own experience, it's when you get an individual that is extremely difficult to handle, it takes more than two. Sometimes I've seen as many as five, you know, officers involved in trying to deal with them. So I appreciate where he's wanting to go with that. But at the same time, I'm sensitive, too, to try to find some middle ground there as well, just if that might help you.
And I hope that the two of you will be meeting. I would like to move on this bill eventually. And I hope you will be meeting. There can be certainly some exceptions, but it seems to me that it's just totally inhumane that some people will never be getting any fresh air, and that's sort of what I'm hearing here. Representative Gelser.
I was wondering if it would be possible, before we heard this bill again, to get some information about the fiscal impact when the Oregon State Penitentiary began to assure that all individuals that were on death row have daily access to the outdoors and fresh air. It seems like there might be some precedent there for what that looks like with a high-risk population, to be sure that there is access.
It's a great idea. Is that possible? And so I think maybe it was Reps and Calvin, but somebody was asking for more information about how often people do get fresh air, how many people do not get fresh air, and what it would take to help those folks who are not getting outside to be able to get some.
Madam Chair, we'd be happy to get that information. And if I could just add a comment about if you look at the master plan, the Phase 2 report, and look at some of the architectural drawings, you can see how the buildings are built in pods, but around a central courtyard kind of area. And those are the kind of architectural designs that I think it really takes to do this kind of thing in a way that makes sense.
Okay. Any other questions or concerns? Thank you. We'll be seeing you again. Thank you. So I'm closing the poem. Is there anyone else who wishes to speak on this issue? Yes.
Chair Tomei, committee members, for the record, my name is Gina Nichol. I am the executive director of the Association of Community Mental Health Programs. And for the record, we just wanted to say that we have not taken a position on this bill for some of the reasons mentioned. How can you deny somebody fresh air? Yet at the same time, we think this represents a very opportune time to talk about the community part of the state hospital master plan. We believe that this bill will apply to the future, not only the state hospital, but the community part of the state hospital master plan, and that has not begun to be talked about as far as costs. And so that is our main concern with this bill, that we not only talk about the state hospital and the new state hospital, but also the community part that would support the state hospital and how this bill applies.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Nichols. See if anyone has any questions. Thank you very much. Is anyone else who wishes to speak on this bill? All right, I'm going to close the public hearing on 2312 and 2313. And I will open public hearing on 2022. Okay, I'm going to take a quick, what do we call it? Break, recess. 5 minute recess.
House Bill 2022 relates to workplace violence involving nurses. And to summarize the main provisions of the measure, one, it would require both ambulatory surgical centers and hospitals to maintain records, take mitigation efforts. It would also require them to collect information, which they would submit to the Department of Business and Consumer Services by January 2009. And those are the two main provisions.
Thank you. No one has signed up to speak on this today, but I'm going to ask Patty Sullivan to come up for a moment. Oh, she's rolling her eyes.
For the record, my name is Patty O. Sullivan.
What did I say? Patty Sullivan?
Sullivan, yeah. My dad didn't like that too well. And I'm open to questions. Did you want me to?
Patty, before the meeting, you happened to mention that you thought there was a fiscal on this. So would you just briefly talk about that?
Late Friday. Thank you, Representative. Late Friday, I received a fiscal because I approve all the fiscals in the department as well. And from the Oregon State Hospital for the three different sites. We have one in Salem, Portland, and Pendleton. And the fiscal impact for that was estimated to be $280,000. Most of it is for two staff that would have to do the extra record-keeping, inspections, and those types of things. And then there was $50,000 approximately for some programming for computers, to program our computers to be able to take care of all the record-keeping. And so I let LFO know, and I called Representative Olson over the weekend, gave him a heads up.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? No, Sullivan.
Yes, you're good to take it.
Good morning, Patty.
Good morning.
The programming for the record keeping, can you, record keeping, record tracking? Help me out there.
Both.
Okay. For
both to do programming. Our computer systems are quite old, and it's not, you have to have certain fields to keep certain amount of data. And our data for injuries and illnesses is required both by JACO and by Oregon OSHA, and it doesn't include down to the level that this bill does. Scratches, abrasions, bruises are not to the level of first aid normally. And so now we have, in order to start tracking and keeping track and have reporting requirements for that level of very minor injuries, relatively speaking, would take more people and more costs and more programming to be able to keep track of those.
Okay. Thanks.
Just to add that, that estimate comes from our information systems people. So we didn't just like guess.
Representative Maurer.
Yes, Madam Chair. A couple questions. You know, I, as a owner of a small medical clinic, we get mandates all the time and don't have the ability to go to the state or federal government and ask for more dollars to comply with these regulations. And so I guess I have a concern there. And my other concern is the, you know, the reference to JACO. And you said it's a JACO requirement for tracking.
Mm-hmm. Major injuries.
Okay. I thought, because major injuries to staff?
Correct.
Okay.
Representative, could I interrupt just for a second?
Ma'am.
Could you please tell us, we're going to be speaking in words here in this committee, so could you speak in terms of words instead of letters?
Exactly. Joint Commission for Accreditation Healthcare Organizations.
Thank you, Representative Maurer.
And Representative Maurer, we're required by the legislature to do a fiscal impact on every bill, to tell every state agency is, to tell the legislature how much that it costs to implement that bill. We're required to do that. So we're just doing as required.
Okay. And I get a follow-up to that. I can appreciate the financial, but I don't know the history, but my thought is that this has been discussed for more than a year, more than a couple years. Is that correct, Madam Chair?
I think, over 2 years, right?
Over 2 years. Mm-hmm.
Over 2 years.
Legislative session.
Okay, that's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Olson.
Patty, looking at Section 4 of this thing and the different items that are identified for what is required to be reported and collected for the data issue. From my 29 years' experience in state government, the employer management person should be collecting similar data already on a SAFE 801. Now, also from my own experience, too, we had a Form 22 with the Oregon State Police that identified information specifically that would capture just about everything that's here right now. You're not doing that right now.
Chair Tomei, Representative Olson, I believe we are. I mean, it's required, although if you look at Section 4, paren 1, small e, large a, that's where we get into a lot of extra record-keeping and tracking, and that's mild soreness, surface abrasions, scratches, or small bruises. The rest of them are describe major injuries that we're already required to track and look into.
So if someone comes to you, right? Excuse me. Thank you, Madam Chair. So if someone comes to a manager right now and it identifies that they've been injured on the work and there's no visible major soreness, cuts or anything, but it comes back, yes, I do have a scratch, I do have an abrasion from a little bit of a wrestling match or anything, do you have any means for capturing that at all?
Chair Tomei, Representative Olson, I don't work in the state hospital, so I don't know, but I would like to ask Bob Nickel to come up, and he's in charge of the state hospital and may have more information on this. I mean, this kind of caught us off guard to come up and testify on our fiscal impact, but... he's inviting his friend.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I don't know the detailed answer.
Could you identify yourself?
Oh, Bob Nickel, Assistant Director of the Department of Human Services. I don't know the answer, but I happen to sit next to a supervising nurse at the state hospital, and she does, so I'll let her introduce herself.
My name is Mary Lou Sandlis, and I'm a nursing supervisor in the forensics services, which are the maximum and on down to the minimum security patients who are there under PSRB or under the need for evaluation prior to going to court. There was a reference earlier to JCO, Joint Commission on Hospital Accreditation. They only focus on patient care. They don't care what happens to staff. That's all OSHA or safe claims. Most of the information that this bill covers is captured in safe claims. People who say, well, you know, my shoulder's a little bit sore from that wrestling match, I'm not going to go to the doctors, but I'm going to do an 802, and I'm going to make sure the paperwork is done in case I don't come in tomorrow. I'll have it covered. We ask staff to document every possible injury, every potential sprain. We don't ask them to have blood flowing or bone sticking out. If they think they were hurt, we want them to report it, and they do. The difference between the number of people who report an injury and the number of people who have time off from an injury is vast. And just, I mean, I can guarantee you that if there's even a suspicion of a potential harm, people will report it.
Madam Chair, thank you. As I'm looking back from my past experience, and I know that there's two different means that the Oregon State provided. One was the Form 22, which captured the assaultive behavior or contact with an individual that didn't merit the step to go toward a safe 801 form, mainly because there wasn't any serious injury where they visited the hospital for a check or that there was time loss. So the Form 22 captured everything else, and then the potential if maybe a week or two down the road a sprain moved, you know, into the skeletal muscle or something like that, where they did have to go to the hospital, the Form 22 captured everything initially, and then you were able to go into the 801. Now, what I'm curious about is the information that you shared with me, that everybody's wanting to come, you know, I mean, does report everything. How do you, and what is the means that you capture that right now for data to be able to refer back to that should you need to move into an 801?
We have a safety officer who looks at all the reports and screens them for viability and sends them back if they're incomplete or sends them on to safe if necessary. I mean, we have a full-time safety officer who just is involved with employee injuries. Accidents, whether it's slip and fall, whether it's, you know, somebody opens the door into their own toe, to somebody being assaulted by a patient, all the injuries are captured.
Okay.
So I have a question then. So what would you have to do differently or more of if this bill were to pass?
If this bill were to pass, our hope is that there would be a central location for all hospitals to collect this information. That it wouldn't just be the state hospital that's recording assaults, but that everybody could report that. Oregon Nursing Association has said that they are willing to be that capture agency if no one else can do it.
But you would not have to do anything more than what you were already doing. Is that correct?
As the hospital, Oregon State Hospital, would not have to do another thing.
Thank you very much.
Representative,
pass for now.
Okay.
Madam Chair, if I could just suggest that we need a little bit more time to go back and take a look at this. We're having different staff report different kinds of impacts here, and I simply have not had the time to sort this one out, and I would like to have a chance to do that if the committee would allow me to do that.
Representative, in fact, it was the safety officer who put this fiscal together. So now we're hearing two different things. It happens in a large organization. I apologize for coming here fairly unprepared, but it's better to get it out, I think, and get it taken care of than to go on as if this is all the information.
Right.
So
I think, as Representative Maurer pointed out, we've been working on this for over 2 years. So one would think that some of these questions would have come up earlier. As I recall, in some of the information we have, it said that DHS said there would be no fiscal for the Department of Human Resources. So we need to work on this, and I would ask for no more surprises.
And Chair, my understanding is last session's bill is different than this session's bills, and sometimes little nuances can make a big difference. So I right now have somebody back there looking at last session's bill to see why we said none. Well, and that was the superintendent of the state hospital that came and said it. And I talked to Representative Olson over the weekend about different people going to different meetings over the interim and purporting things and that not coming back through management to really look at. And that's something that Bruce and I have talked about recently that's happened on a number of committees in the interim.
Thank you.
So we will look into that,
Thank
too.
Thank you. Representative Olson? Okay. Any other questions? Concerns? Great. I'm assuming that everybody who's involved with this will be working on this so that we can pass this measure through. Thank you very much
for coming.
I'll close the public hearing on 2022. I'm going to open up a work session on 2022 just to put in the amendment that I think all of you have. So I open up a work session on 2022. And I would entertain a motion to amend with the dash one amendment.
Madam Speaker, I would make a motion to.
Speaker, I like
I'm
that.
I'm sorry.
All right.
Disregard. Start over again. Madam Chair, I would move that the dash one amendments for House Bill 2022 be accepted.
Representative Olson moves that the dash one amendments would be accepted by this committee. Are there any objections? Oh, I'm sorry. Andy's going to be explaining.
Thank you, Chair. Just to explain the effect of the amendment, Amendment 2022-1 would amend line 12 of the bill. After the word employee on line 12, the following words would be added. Of a healthcare employer. So as amended, Section 3, which starts on line 11, would read, home healthcare services means items or services furnished to a patient by an employee of a healthcare employer in a place of temporary or permanent residence used as a patient's home.
Great. Representative Olson moved the dash one amendment. Do I have any? Yes, Representative.
Can I just ask a question
of
before
course.
We move on? We heard testimony at the hearing about the home health worker versus home care employee. Is the intention of this amendment to encompass that full definition then of all of those?
I'm going to let Representative Olson answer that.
The intent of this, Representative Cowan, thank you, Madam Chair, was to focus on any involvement that had a connection through hospitals.
Through hospitals.
That's correct.
Specifically.
That's right.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay. So we have a motion, and so we can just say aye, right? We don't have to call the roll. Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No? Okay, seeing no objections, the motion passes. And so with that.
Madam Chairman?
Yes.
So is your intent to have folks come back? I'm just wondering if the concern around the fiscal, are we trying to determine whether it should have a referral to Ways and Means?
Yes.
Okay, is that okay? Thank you.
Any other questions about the process and what's going to be happening with this bill? As I said, this. Representative Olson and I, to some extent, but Representative Olson clearly is spending a great deal of time, and not only Representative Olson, but many other people from the healthcare community have worked on this bill, and it's somewhat disconcerting to have sort of these last-minute issues coming up that should have been vetted long before, so it's somewhat frustrating, but it's my intent, certainly, to pass this bill, and I'm encouraging all who are involved in this to meet outside of this meeting room and work on this so that we can pass this Good bill. So with that, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2022. And if there's any other business we need to be discussing today, we'll be meeting again on Wednesday. And I think you have the agenda for that day. And we'll be dealing with this possibly a week from today, but we will put out a notice for that. So with that, I'll close the work for the meeting on Health and Human Services and Women's Wellness Committee.